welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It is episode number 426. My name is James Gilmore. Joining me today, as always, it's Emily Soden.
I am back for another week.
The week back with it. You are... Oh, I've gone a bit Yoda.
You did.
Don't know what happened there. Did you see The Last Jedi, by the way, the newest Star Wars thing?
I did, and I am not a fan.
Oh. So I love the way it's divided opinion, because everyone watched The Force Awakens and went, oh, it's just like the old Star Wars. They don't know anything new. This is rubbish. I hate it. And then they watched The Last Jedi and went, oh, it does all this weird new stuff that's not like Star Wars. I hate it.
Yeah, to be fair, the Last Jedi, I really enjoyed the art of it and the art style, the cinematography.
Yeah.
That side was aces, but everything else was just Puff and Carrie, obviously, but Carrie is queen.
See, I think it had high moments that were better than anything in The Force Awakens, and equally low moments that were worse than anything in The Force Awakens. It's a mess of a movie. It's all over the shop.
Yeah.
But there were eccentric bits that I liked in it.
It just felt kind of rushed. And it's like nothing happened in it.
Yeah, but it does default to kind of like, and we're sort of back to where we started.
It's like a filler episode of Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah, or an episode of Next Generation, where everything's just like, and we reach the end of the episode, everyone does a little, and everything's back to normal, just as you left it. That's how it works, it's all good. Except unless you're watching Star Trek Discovery, in which case, ooh, everything just carries on, and it's different, and it's dark, and it's got horrible war and torture in it.
I quite like it.
Good. People don't like that either. Yeah. Star Trek's gone and done something different. Oh, don't like that. This is rubbish. Let's watch The Orville instead, which is Seth MacFarlane doing TNG cosplay.
Oh, yeah. God, I forgot that existed. But it's got Seth MacFarlane in. He can do whatever he wants.
Can he, though?
Well, I assume so.
Anyway. Let's do game stuff, shall we? It's been a glorious week for news, especially if you own a Nintendo Switch. Not quite such good news if you own an older iOS device and you want to play Pokemon, though. That'll be coming up in the news section. Along with new releases, which include the like of the latest in the Rusty series, Rusty Lake Paradise, plus Let Them Come sees you basically doing that bit in the Aliens deleted scene where you set up a sentry gun and blow the pants out of everything, plus an interview with Dan, the creator behind Clear Vision, a series of games which he came up with while he was recovering from a serious illness, and how it actually helped him get through a really dark time by shooting people in the face. But first, the news. Perhaps you've spent the last 2 years capturing lots of Pokemon Go's on your phone in little Pokeballs, and you've built up a lovely collection and are very happy with yourself. Well, you better look into capturing a new phone, because it ain't gonna work anymore. And that is becoming the constant refrain of games on the App Store. Because Pokemon Go developer Niantic has revealed that Pokemon Go will no longer be compatible with older iOS devices that cannot run iOS 11. Basically, the game is being updated to be only iOS 11 compatible, and therefore, anything that can't run that OS ain't going to be running Pokemon Go no more.
A sad face all around.
It is if you are like a long-term player who's played it for ages and is now, you know, running an iPhone 5S, let's say, because that's the break-off level we're talking here. So basically 5S, 5Cs, 5.4, all those ones. And yes, I know they're 4 years old, these phones, but when the update appears, they will no longer be able to run it. We've seen this with a lot of games on the App Store when it went from like 32-bit to 64-bit. People went, well, we're not going to be able to update this game from like 7 years ago and no one's playing it anyway, so shrug. But you know, that costs somebody money. They might have paid for that app back in the day, and then now they're locked out of it because their phone can't hack it anymore. With Pokemon Go, it's A, only 2 years old, B, it does allow for in-app purchases, and you might be in a situation where you've played this game to the point where you've actually invested real money into it, and now you're going to be locked out because it's just not going to work anymore. Unless you spend £600-700 or dollars on a new phone.
Yeah. Yeah, well, this is what I touched on in the article, is that it's like, I understand that Niantic want to push forward and do more stuff that's a bit more strenuous on older devices and the OS system, things like that. But to then physically force someone, like if someone loves playing Pokemon Go, but doesn't have the money to upgrade their phone or doesn't want to upgrade their phone, like if you're one of those people that is just like, oh, my phone is fine, I don't want to upgrade it because it's not broken, then how is that fair?
Yeah, well, it's a different kind of marketplace now, a different kind of ecosystem, because the thing is, consoles, you're tied to those for, like, let's say 4 to 8 years as a cycle, and then you buy the console, and every game that's released in that period of time will work on that console. Phones follow more like the PC upgrade tree, if you like, to use an RPG term, i.e. that you buy the PC, but then you maybe upgrade a bit of it, and you give the RAM a boost, and then you, you know, swap out the GPU or something like that, and you have to keep upgrading in order to stay current. And that's what's happening here. And yes, when you look at, we had discussed this with one of the interviewees way back, when they pointed out, I still have an iPhone 6 lying around somewhere, and they're like, you realize that's like 4 years old now, and the quantum leap in processing power that's happened in the last 4 years means that you're basically looking at the equivalent of like a PS4 versus a PS2 in terms of what it can do. So, of course, that stuff isn't going to run anymore. But with Pokemon Go, up until now, it obviously has. And what they're doing is they're clearly adding a few extra things to the app that means that, you know what, actually, your 5S won't run this anymore. So, sorry, we're interested in adding this new content for the newer devices than keeping the old fan base, or the fan base who run old phones, happy.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think this wouldn't be such a weird situation if, like, they gave you the option of, you've got an iPhone 5S or something, you don't have to upgrade, like, just don't upgrade it and you can still play the game. But apparently that's just, it's just not going to work at all.
Yeah, like, run an old version of the app.
Yeah.
And it'll be okay. But because it's an online thing and you need to, you know, tap into, be connected to the internet at all time, and the whole thing is based around, you know, using map systems and location software, then it needs to be online and communicating at all times. So that's a no. Now, before you freak out, it doesn't happen until February the 28th. So you still got a month and a half to either upgrade your phone or just not play the game anymore. I forget which publication did it, so apologies. But someone went back and they looked at their list of top 50 games on the App Store ever. Don't know if you saw this.
No, I did not.
And it was from, like, about 7 years ago. And they went back and checked to see, like, how many of these games, these 50 games, can I actually still get today? And the answer is 10.
Oh, my God.
So those 40 best apps ever were either deleted from the App Store because they were obsolete or were unable to be played on newer OSs and no one's updated them or whatever. So it just speaks to the churn of the App Store, how quickly stuff is. It's in, it's popular, you play it for 6 months, and then it's forgotten about, gone. The best app you ever played is now just like, oh, forget about that, no one needs that. And then it's not even updated, and it, you can't even play it anymore. Mm. It just vanishes. And we've spoken about this for years now in relation to the way that things vanish now because of digital content. The PT situation on the PS4, where you can't download PT anymore because Konami pulled it. Suddenly this game just vanishes from history. Unless you have it still on your hard drive, you can't get it anymore.
Mm.
Do you think anyone's going to be upgrading and spending £800 just to play Pokemon Go?
Nah. I mean, realistically, this might be kind of a point where people who have been on the edge of upgrading, like if they're fierce Pokemon Go players and be like, well, I want to upgrade my phone, but it's still okay. And to be fair, actually, if you've got an iPhone that old, it's likely Apple's going to start slowing your software down anyway.
Yes, and another controversy that was talked about.
Do you like how I pulled that back in?
Yeah, very nice. It's good linking. So yeah, let us know. Em's written a story about it. We've got a bunch of comments appearing underneath. We're curious if you have got an older device and you feel really gutted about this, or if you don't really care and don't see that it's a big deal and you, it's just the creep of time. If you have an older device, guess what? It's not going to run. If you have a PS3, guess what? It's not going to run PS4 games. Deal with it. Which is the way some people look at it. So it's an interesting one, and I think we're only going to see more of this in the future. However, speaking of playing old games on new devices, Nintendo Direct.
It's been a big one.
It's been a big one. An interesting one, not just because of the stuff they released, but because of the way they did it. Which was effectively turning into this, like, weird, is there or is there not a Nintendo Direct?
Yeah, oh, I had so much fun the other night.
Was it fun? Was it just annoying because they were like, they released, well, what was the way? They released, like, a Nintendo Direct, like, plan and then they left a bit blank or something?
No. I mean, this whole thing, like, Nintendo did what Nintendo usually does and stays silent anytime there's a leak or, you know, supposed thing going on. And this was something we caught, like, a couple of weeks ago, someone reported that there was going to be a Nintendo Direct because of, you know, past events and this is likely to happen and blah, blah, blah.
Mm.
And essentially, as the time came closer, like, it was rumored that it was supposed to be at 4 a.m. on January 11th. But on January 10th, someone apparently, like, I think it was GameStop, posted a tweet and then hastily deleted it. Saying something about, the Nintendo Direct is so exciting in 45 minutes or something like that. And the internet just went mad. They started, like, tweeting out things that were just not even remotely true, and they started getting really excited, and GIFs were flying everywhere, and there were memes everywhere. And then Nintendo tweeted out the picture of the weird torch with the wire.
He's a little clanky dude with a wire. I have actually played the game that he's in, and I can't remember the damn character's name.
Yeah, well, some people reckon that was like a homage to the Dark Souls thing.
Yeah, the Praise the Sun image.
Yeah.
Which turned out to be quite prophetic, because I suppose the biggest news to come out of the Direct, when it finally appeared, was, yeah, Dark Souls Remastered. That's coming to Xbox One, to PS4, and to Nintendo Switch.
Yeah, don't you think that's so random?
Just proves that we do, in fact, impact reality with our podcast discussions, because we've talked about this before, the idea of Dark Souls coming onto the Switch. I think it was on people's lists of things they'd like. And the counter-argument had always been, that's good, but given how stressful Dark Souls is, and how much kind of twisting I've done of my joypad in absolute rage, and how other people will just bounce their joypads off of walls when things go wrong, playing it on a Switch with that lovely little screen in the middle and those two fragile little Joy-Cons, when stuff starts going bad, you're going to have to really, really use some self-discipline to avoid snapping your lovely £300 console into bits.
Yeah, it's a thing that I was worried for Glenn, I think, because Glenn is a thrower.
He doesn't handle his rage well, does he?
No, he's the sort of person that, you know, throws the iPad onto the couch or bashes it down on the table or something.
Yeah. And, oh, Dark Souls.
Horrible. It's just going to be chaos.
See, I've been waiting for this for a while. I've been hoping that they were going to release a remastered Dark Souls, because I want to play it on the PS4. I didn't finish it on PS3, but I invested a bunch of time in it. But I can't be asked to go back and reconnect to the TV, frankly, at this point. And I was like, I bet you they'll do one. I'm sure it's coming in the future.
Mm.
And lo, here it is. So I'm delighted it's going to be in 4K, 60 frames a second on my PS4. On the Switch, it's obviously not going to be 4K, but it will be apparently 1080 in docked situations, so it will look good and look nice, and people are obviously very pleased about it coming. It is exciting news, but I wouldn't like to play it, knowing my impulse control problems.
Yeah. Yeah, see, I would like to give it a shot, because I've never actually played the Dark Souls games. I've watched streams and all that sort of stuff, because I've just been worried for my own physical health. In case I pop a vein or something.
I think people will be alright, because the lore surrounding it, all the swirl of, like, most difficult game ever, oh my god, all that stuff, steels you somewhat against it, I think. Because if you just go in thinking it's going to be an action, arcade fighter, then you are in for a grim surprise. But if you go in going, oh, this is going to be hard and I'm going to die loads and loads and loads of times, and you're prepared for that, then I think it's okay, you approach it in a different way, and that's what that game is all about. It's not the most difficult game in the world, it's just hardcore. Requires you to play it in a certain way.
Yeah, yeah.
And not get cross every time you die, because otherwise you'll rage quit very quickly.
Yeah, and see, I'm an insulter, rather than a basher or squeezer.
Yeah, you're a verbalist rather than physical. Yeah,
it's like, you know, with the sort of things where you whistle through your teeth when you're trying not to swear, and you're just like...
Yeah.
That's me.
Yeah. I tend to I swear. I'd say bad words.
Yeah.
Not PewDiePie bad, obviously, because I'm not a monster.
No, but just, British bad.
British bad words. Oh, bother, I say. Drat. Very loudly, like that. That's not what happens at all. And my partner gets very annoyed, because she comes to me the next morning and is like, were you swearing at the TV last night?
Like,
when
no,
she's
dear.
In bed, it could hear me cursing out some creature in a game, because that's my life now. So that was one announcement. Obviously not the only announcement, probably one that caught most attention. So Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, that's going to be coming to the Switch as well. The game from the Wii U back in 2014, that's coming along. That's nice. Two-player local co-op. Very good. Yeah. 4th of May for that. I should probably say that 25th of May is the date for Dark Souls Remastered. We've also got the likes of Payday 2. That's coming on in the end of February. We also got a bunch of updates. So Mario and Rabbids Kingdom Battle is going to get more DLC. That's going to turn up in sometime in spring. You've got the Hyrule Warrior Definitive Edition is coming to Switch, which is that Zelda-themed version of Dynasty Warriors.
Yeah, I'm not that bothered about that one.
Which I've never played. Another tennis game, which you rolled your eyes at. Not a tennis fan, then, Em?
No, I'm just not a sports fan. Like, a gaming sports fan, I mean.
Okay. I thought that weren't the Mario tennis games supposed to be all right?
I don't know, because I wasn't ever a Nintendo person.
Another weird one that I didn't expect to see. The World Ends With You Final Remix. So, like, this is an old, weird Nintendo DS JRPG that did come to iOS and then was constantly working, then not working, working, then not working, again, due to updates, and is now not working, full stop. Another casualty of the iOS update process. But apparently the Final Remix version is going to be coming onto the Switch, which is cool because it's an odd, weird RPG all about dressing in cool outfits as well as doing fighting. And it's fun, and so that's a nice thing to turn up. There is more. There's a full list. You can find it on the article that Em wrote and a little video of the Nintendo Direct Mini announcement if you want to see it actually play out. There are lots of first-person style sniper shooters available on the App Store and Google Play. A lot of them are obsessed with taking down very realistic-looking animals or just sniping people in the face in bloody and gory detail. The Clear Vision games take a slightly different tactic at presenting sniping combat by using stick figures to represent your enemies and killing them in a variety of often amusing and comically gory ways. I'm joined today by Dan Erhard Olsen of Eldring Games, who's responsible for the Clear Vision series. Dan, good to have you today.
Good to be here. Thank you.
So this all started, I mean, the origins of the game itself was a Flash game originally, right?
Yeah, that's right. Started actually when I was a teenager. Used to play a lot of soccer, football in Sweden, and I had a really promising career. But what happened was that I got a blood poisoning at the age of 16, and ended up in the hospital. And obviously, yeah, I was fighting for my life, and made it through. And it was a long time of rehab for me, and it was I was sort of in a dark place, and right, I had to find an outlet. And I had this idea of a game that I had been, you know, thinking about for a while. I used to be active on animation forums and stuff, and that's that was the time when I developed the first Clear Vision game. It was a Flash game, and it got really popular, and it's probably been played over, you know, around the 80 million, 100 million mark by now.
I remember seeing it when it originally appeared, actually as a Flash. I think it was like 2007 or something, around about that time.
Yeah, that's right.
It appeared, wasn't it? Yeah, it's an interesting form of rehabilitation, that one. Is it reflective of your state of mind at the time? You say you're in a dark place, so the game you made was just about shooting lots of anonymous stick men.
Well, actually, I was really happy making the game. That made me happy at the time. So it was sort of my escape, you know, I sort of liked the dark humor, and obviously I didn't have that much dark humor as much as we do now. But
Well, the game that arrived on the App Store, it was back in 2012 when the first Clear Vision appeared, and it did go to the top of the App Store when it was originally released. I remember that when I was just starting out here. It's actually a port of, was it Clear Vision 3 or 5? Like, technically, the first mobile game is like the fifth iteration of the Flash game, right?
Well, to make it complicated, that was actually, I named it Clear Vision 5 to be able to actually port it to a Flash version to promote it for the mobile.
Right, I see. Well, you mentioned the kind of dark humor of it all, and other sniper games that you kind of get out often lean towards the realistic. I mentioned the things like Deer Hunter franchises, which is all about trying to give you that real feeling of really taking down a deer and shooting the right organs and all that kind of stuff, which is super popular in the US. But I'm not a personal fan of that stuff. I find it quite sort of clinical and a bit grim. Whereas you put a layer of, I guess, irony between the actual murdering people thing by using the stickman, that kind of Xiao Xiao style from the early 2000s, where it's lots of animated stickman doing stuff, and then sort of, you know, play it for larks. Are you a fan of those straight up sniper games like Deer Hunters or Hitman Sniper and stuff, or do you prefer the comedy take on it all?
Yeah, well, it depends. I agree with you there. You made a pretty good analysis there on Clavision, you know, layering with the Stickman figures. It depends a lot on the game, but mostly I found them quite boring and slow, the sniper games, and most, I think, are quite generic and, you know, pretentious. It's like super serious, super clinical, and just a little bit boring.
Well, I often find they tend to fetishize the gun culture as well. Though you do have the upgrade systems in Clearvision as well. It's not just, even though the Stickmen look very sort of crude and simplistic, you do actually have different types of sniper rifles and the ability to upgrade and bolt things onto the side of it as well, don't you?
Yeah, we do. A fun aspect of it is that we now for the new game that we're developing is that you're going to be able to sort of mix it all together by yourself. It's going to be your own unique combination. You can have a bean can as the scope, and you can have a wooden board as the stock. And,
oh, right.
You know, yeah, so it's going to be all from quite ridiculous looking weapons to the more serious types.
Well, the most recent game that came out on iOS was Clearvision 3, which kind of continues the story of this guy who has a secret kind of like assassin's base beneath his house and then just goes around taking people out. But the new one you're talking about that hasn't been released yet, that's going to be an online game, right? Kind of a multiplayer thing.
Yeah, we've been working very hard on that game. It's going to be we could sort of call it like a sniping strategy game where you, like, the taking out the other players in their bases are the actual missions. So it's going to be a huge variety, and you're this sniper in this sniping world, and you take other players down and to race to the top of the world rankings, sort of.
So I assume you'll be able to take on other players and their bases, but it can't be in real time, right? That's got to be like you go in and shoot some folk there, and then the other player logs on and goes, oh no, my base has been taken down. Is that how it works? Or
yeah, that's going to be how it works, like asynchronous, I think the word is.
Yeah, asynchronous, yes.
Yeah, asynchronous. Yeah, that's going to be the type.
I imagine that's to go from like a Flash game, which is just a single player, you know, straight line narrative chapter experience, to something like that, that's quite a step up, especially considering that you guys are an indie studio and Clearvision basically is your company, right? Like, that's the only game that you guys make.
Yeah, pretty much. It is a huge step for us, especially since we're not that many people involved, and we learn sort of the hard way. But the people that I work with here are, you know, exceptionally talented in their own fields, animator, the graphic guys, and we're a small studio, and it's a big step, like you said.
So what have you had to change? Because presumably you've done numerous iterations of the single player campaign. As soon as you go right online multiplayer, have you had to completely change your like talent base? Have you had to get new people on board, or is it still the core team just learning new skills?
The core is still the core, but we have been taking in very, very good people from the outside to assist us with the, you know, server integration and this whole engine of a game that we're developing. It's actually a much bigger step behind the scenes than it actually looks when you play the games, from going from a Flash single player games into a multiplayer games. It's a lot of things that we need to learn and new steps to take, yeah.
Most indie developers, when they start out, obviously they're hoping to turn it into a full-blown career, but often they're doing other things alongside making the game because it's not bringing any revenue at that point. So people are often working day jobs and then working on it in the evening. In your case, it was slightly different given that you were, you know, incapacitated for a bit and actually using it during your recovery time as something to focus on. But at what point were you able to go, actually, there's a business in this? This isn't just a little Flash game now. I can dedicate my 24/7 like life to this and work on it. At what point did it switch over into a career?
Actually, that was quite early. The Flash games, they wouldn't be able to support me that much. I decided to make it into my career when I started developing the first mobile version. So I put all my savings and all that I had, pretty much it was all me and another guy doing the character animation, developing the first game. So it wasn't much of a cost for me. It was just the living expenses for that year and a half But I mean, eventually, during the development, I did run out of money, so I had to move back home. I had to, what do you say, when you terminate your office space, I had to move home and work from home in order to finalize it.
Right.
And once the game got released, you know, I had so much hopes for that game. I felt that was the only thing. If I got to choose where to be anywhere in the world, I would still choose to work on that game because I had so much fun doing it. I knew it was going to be my career for a long time after their first game hit the top charts.
Well, to that point, making money, when you first released the game, it was a premium app store. You know, you were releasing the game for like £1.99 or $1.99, something like that. Whereas now, of course, there's been the huge shift. Everything's gone free to play, and you've adjusted accordingly, which is Clear Vision 3 is a free to play game. You've got an energy system in there, and I imagine that there'll be free to play mechanics in the online version as well. How has that been as a shift when you are pulling revenue from just this kind of game, just this one series you've got, and suddenly the whole model changes on you? You got to get that shift right, haven't you?
Yeah, it was a challenge for Clear Vision 3, but at the same time, I really enjoy taking on the challenge to adapt, and I believe we do it very well in this next one. And one of the rules that we have is that we don't want anything that looks like pay to win. We don't want that because we personally don't like it when we play. But obviously, there is a balance that you have to walk between. I mean, you still have to make money as a small studio, and still you don't want to sell out completely. So. We focus a lot on cosmetic in-app purchases for the new games.
So based around like Stickman characters, is it? what kind of stuff are we talking about? Cosmetically?
Yeah, for this game, we're talking about helmets and facial expressions and beards, right, and stuff like that. So that's where we go nuts, sort of.
Do you know when it might be coming out? Are you nearing the end of development for it?
Yeah, we're going to have a soft launch here in the first quarter of this year.
Okay.
And realistically, we believe we're going to have a full release in somewhere around April, at the end of April this year.
Well, we look forward to seeing the game when it is live and on the app stores. And in the meantime, best of luck with the development. Dan, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Out and about this week. There's no kind of clear, massive release of the week, but there's a lot of kind of quite interesting mid-level stuff. So we're going to start with Let Them Come, which is a sort of tower defense, the best way to describe it, but in an arcade way. So as I said in the start of it, it's that bit from Aliens. So if you imagine looking at a corridor like a side-on side-scroller, pixel art style, on the left you've got your dude who is just a marine gunman set up at a gun placement with a big cannon, and then from the right-hand side of the screen, big, nasty, squiggly aliens trundling towards you, waiting to bite your face off. And you've got to just shoot your gun. That's it. Shoot the gun. Move up and down on the left-hand side of the screen. Swipe your thumb to aim the cannon up and down. Things crawl along the ceiling and along the floor, and they turn into other things, and big tentacles come out, and they leap at you from halfway across. And that's all actually handled really nicely. So the explosions are some of the most satisfying explosions I've seen in a game for ages.
Oh.
When you're shooting the squiggly aliens and they go and explode in kind of green goo and it splatters everywhere. It's a really nice animation. And I like it when it happens. It's proper, like, you know, cause and effect, action reaction, where you're like, yeah.
Yeah.
So it gives me that nice feeling of satisfaction. So that's good. You can also upgrade your cannon. You add loads of, like, passive buffs, so you can get armor and things like that, which you get through coins that you earn via playing. It's a premium game, by the way. It's not a free-to-play thing. But you will hit a point, mainly the first boss, where it gets quite hard and you have to grind for a while in order to get enough health and gear to take this guy down. There's also another mode which you can play, like a rampage mode, I think, where you just open-ended fire, because the idea is it works your way through waves. So you'll get to the third wave and die, but then when you restart, you'll start again at wave 3, the beginning of wave 3. So you're always sort of making progress, gradually creeping through the game. It's quite good. Especially at the beginning, it does get a bit samey and a bit grindy after a while. But I suggest you look at the video review that we've got up and work it out for yourself, because it's got enough to recommend it. If it was 99 cents or something, 99 pence, I'd say definitely yes. But to have a look and see what you think, I think it's quite cool. Now, Rusty Lake Paradise came out. I was unfamiliar with this series. I think you know more about this than I do.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good series. Like, if you're not one that likes the weird stuff, maybe not.
Yeah, well, I like the weird stuff, which is why I'm annoyed I haven't heard about it. So these are point-and-click adventures, which are told in a sort of odd, otherworldly, and it gets used an awful lot, this term, but this is really applicable and clearly deliberate, Lynchian style. Mm. It's well David Lynch and Twin Peaks, right down to the point where I've come across a character who speaks with the weird backwards voice that you get from the Red Room, where the gum you like will come back in style. Having said that, I like that style. I like that weirdness and that off-center thing, and this appeals. So Rusty Lake Paradise is the name of this one, where you play Jacob, who is the oldest son of the Elander family. His mum's died, he's gone back to the island, and he needs to get into the island. And it's just working your way through this bizarre forest with weird gatekeepers and people you meet, and a goat who wants to drink blood, and you have to catch a shrimp to give to a man, and then the man lets you through, and then a woman is sitting there, and you pull on her nose, and gradually a weird leech comes out of her nose, and then you crush it in a machine to make blood that fills up, and it's odd. It's presented in this sort of quaint style, where it's like they're kind of pioneers or something from like the early 1900s, late 1800s. So they've got waistcoats on, and it seems all wholesome, but it's just weird ritualistic stuff. I quite like it.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's pretty much a theme that runs through most of Rusty Lake stuff, so...
Okay.
I think the App Army, actually, because I've given it to them this week for their assemble, have all been like, what have you done to us?
Really? They've reacted the same.
Yeah, pretty much. But then you would, like, if you didn't know anything... Like, I've been following Rusty Lake for years.
Okay.
And I met them in 2016 when they were working on Roots, which is their last premium game.
Right.
And I just kind of assumed that that's just their style. Like, I mean, Cube Estate Escape is kind of, like, more mellow, since it's a free game and it's more puzzler.
I played one of the Cube Escape games. That's their other little franchise.
Mm. Yeah, but the premium stuff is all a little bit like, whoa.
I'm now interested. I might backtrack and see what the other games are like.
Yeah, Roots is good.
Okay, well, this one is $2.99 or $2.99. Rusty Lake Paradise, the full name of that one. What else we got on the list here? We have Helihopper, which is a little game about jumping a helicopter from platform to platform, Angry Bird style. So you're just pulling back and releasing, and he's boing, and hopefully you'll hit the platform, or you might overshoot and go plummeting to your death. But while you're in midair, you can do little adjustment swipes, so you can try to like coax it a bit further left or a bit further right. In order to get out of the way, you have to account for things like wind speed and stuff like that. It's like really very simple. It's actually very sort of slick the way it's been presented. It looks like it has quite a big budget for such a little tap simple game. But obviously, it's just a free to play little distraction. I've only played it for a few minutes. It works. It does its thing, and you can give it a go if you fancy, I guess. Quickly before we do more iOS stuff, Switch, that's had a release, hasn't it? We've got, is it the Escapists 2?
Yeah, you got the second Escapists out on the Switch now. That's very, very nice.
Right.
It's got an upgraded art style, more weaponry, a better crafting system, and more levels and things like that. The whole thing has just gotten a bit of a makeover, and it's really nice. Like, there's more to it.
Does it keep the original, like, 16-bit art style of the first game, or is it now looking a little bit more...
It's more or less the same 16-bit art style, but, like, okay, beefed up a bit more. So, like, there's more animations between each stage, if you know what I mean.
Okay, yeah. I played the first one as an iPad game for the reviews, and I feel like I barely scratched the surface of it.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely, like, one that needs real investment. Like, I was supposed to do the review for today, but I haven't even invested half of the time I need to.
If you play some things for, like, 2-3 hours, you kind of go, all right, I get the gist of this, especially if it's a mobile game, but... Just for the video, so I had to keep recording and recording and recording. It's like, I've not got enough. This isn't... I don't feel like I've got anything to show yet.
Yeah, but it was like, oh, God, what was the game called? Golf Story?
Oh, yeah.
Is that one? That was the one where I played it for, like, 9 hours before I finally decided that I loved it.
Okay.
Like, I could not... the weird thing was, I played it for, like, 8.5 hours, just through and through, but I couldn't put it down, but I didn't know if I liked it or not. I was like, I don't think that I like it. I can't stop playing it, but I'm not happy about it. And then it like clocked over and I was like, oh yeah, actually, this is great.
Those Steam reviews that you get where they say, this game's rubbish, 1 star, I absolutely hate it. And you look down and they spent 500 hours on it.
Yeah.
You're like, dude, you must have liked something about it, my guy. Because seriously, what have you been doing with your time? Okay, well, The Escapist 2, that is out on Switch at the minute for download. Another one that's come for iOS, this is one of the ones I haven't played this week, is Dresden Files, which is a card-based kind of whodunit, I guess, murder mystery style game.
Yeah, is that the one that's kind of like a little bit horror, a little bit paranormal?
I think it's got a paranormal edge to it, yeah. I don't know as much because I haven't played this one. Mm. But going by the trailers and things like that, yes. It's the one we've got guides for up already on the site, and I think the review is up too, and I think we broadly quite liked it as well. But check out the review. It's a more expensive one, £6.99 or $6.99, but I think the PG opinion is that we liked it. But go and check out the review for more info there. And finally, we've got the return of that Super Meat Boy, but this time in Switch form.
Yes, it's going to be delightful.
Again. Have you played it? You haven't played the Switch version yet, no?
No, we still haven't got a code for it. All I know is that, you know, I've played it on the PC quite a lot.
Yeah.
And it's, again, one of those sorts of games that people just love. It's like The Binding of Isaac, you know, how people kind of almost, is almost a cult following behind it.
It's because of that guy and his particular style of twitchy, very hard, gory weirdness.
Yeah, and he just makes really good addictive games, and they always feel really good.
This is the one that famously wouldn't come to iOS until it sort of did. But I played this most on Xbox when it came onto Xbox Live. I think that's when I got my hands on it. But I guess there's no like harm in these. It's difficult, again, to be like, hey, it's a game that we've already had 20 ports of on all the different platforms, and now it's coming to this one.
Yeah.
Which sounds a bit like, you know, me being miserable. But it's like when the Switch first came out and they were like, World of Goo!
It's like,
yay!
Had it on every other platform.
I mean, it's really good. Yeah. Don't get me wrong, but right. It's like, yeah. Just a bit like that. But at the same time, I'm not going to complain about more good games coming to the Switch. That's a good thing, Robbie, and it'll work great on the Switch, I'm sure.
I reckon they're kind of releasing Super Meat Boy as kind of an opening for Super Meat Boy Forever, anyway.
You think?
Yeah, because that's coming soon. We don't know when, but I reckon, you know, probably before summer.
Testing the waters.
Yeah, exactly. Because there's no point you releasing the next one when you haven't put the original up on it already.
No, I guess so. And with Super Meat Boy and Dark Souls on your Switch, in terms of just, like, rage gaming. I mean, the amount of Switches destroyed in 2018 is going to be historic.
Yeah, I mean, at least they are quite hardy. Like, did you see that video where the person dropped the Switch from the aeroplane?
No.
Yeah, it fell a long time, and it, like, landed on its side, pinged off both the Joy-Cons, but the screen was still workable and you could slip the Joy-Cons back on.
What did it land on, though?
Concrete.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Because it's all plastic. Like, the screen isn't glass, it's plastic.
Oh, okay.
So it's going to be harder than if you were to throw an iPad across the room, but don't throw your Switches.
So you're telling me that a Switch can survive a drop from an aircraft at high altitude onto concrete, but when you put it in a dock, it gets scratched.
Yeah, basically. Well, I mean, the screen was obviously a bit messed up. Plus, I've got a screen protector on mine because I'm smart.
You're a sensible bunny. Well done, you. I am exactly the same with my phones. I'm a protector nerd. Because otherwise, it's scratched on my screen. It'll never go away, and I'll never be able to stop looking at it. That one scratch. Oh, it's ruining everything. Should probably relax a little bit because it doesn't matter that much.
It's okay.
It's okay. All right, that'll do for this week. Come back and join us next week for more video gaming news of the mobile variety. Like, subscribe. Again, more record listeners this week. Hello, if you're new, stay. It's going to be fun. We'll have more interviews and whatnot coming for you. And thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.